Founded in 1970, NPR is America's most powerful broadcast news network. Despite being overshadowed, perhaps, by PBS, public radio has long been home to shows such as All Things Considered, Morning Edition, and This American Life that captivate millions of listeners in homes, cars, and workplaces across the nation. Journalist Steve Oney has written a new book called On Air, The Triumph and Tumult of NPR. It is an epic, decades-long history of National Public Radio, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Steve Oney to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, Steve.
Thank you, Joe.
Very nice to have you on the program. Let's begin here, because I think it's a question that we're asked a lot, and I'm interested in your response to it. What is the current state of NPR?
I think NPR is facing a threat. Whether the threat actually materializes is still too soon to say, but Elon Musk, the head of Donald Trump's Doge, tweeted in January that NPR should be defunded by the federal government and could survive on its own. After that, there have been other threats made, and apparently there are going to be congressional hearings later this month into NPR's status. So it's going to get a shaking at the very least. Whether that shaking actually diminishes NPR, too soon to say. But it's facing calls for it at the very least.
Let me ask a follow-up to that, and then I'll get to sort of the history. But when it comes to the two fronts right now that the problems that seem to be developing, one is an investigation into this question of, is underwriting commercial? Is it a glorified commercial? And if the answer is yes, why does it need public dollars, and why can it then survive on its own? And then the other issue that's being brought forward by Marjorie Taylor Greene is that of bias and political bias at NPR. Let me take the second one first. I mean, this has been something that's been leveled at both PBS and NPR for decades.
NPR has been fighting the charge correct for 40 years. And sometimes it's true, sometimes it's less true, sometimes not very true at all. And it depends on the reporter, on the program, on the point of view of a specific piece airing on NPR. I would say it's safe to say that NPR has a liberal bent, but I think most American news media do. And I've been listening to NPR more than ever since Donald Trump assumed office. And I found its coverage to be, by and large, very even-keeled. And news is happening so rapidly right now, it's very difficult to take it all in. And when I listen to All Things Considered or Morning Edition, I feel they're, you know, if you had a plumb line, it would come out true. You know, over the long haul, I'd say they've certainly been more liberal than conservative, and they fired most infamously a commentator, Ron Williams, for his conservative utterances on Fox News. And the irony of that is Ron had been a contributor to Fox long before he joined NPR. NPR hired Ron, hoping that he would bring to NPR some of what he did for Fox. And then when he started bringing it into their home, they didn't like it so much.
You make the point in the book that the idea behind NPR, and it certainly has evolved over time, that it was a medium for extraordinary journalism. That is what they were trying to do.
I think it is what NPR tries to do. It's a medium not just for extraordinary journalism, but for a very old-fashioned, in fact, primal human need, I believe, which is to sit around a campfire and share stories. And at its best, NPR tells fantastic stories. And I don't mean fantastic in any kind of magical sense. I mean, they are well-constructed, well-reasoned, and thorough. And right now, there's no place else on the radio, except in local public radio affiliates, where you get that attempt to make today's events come alive with context and a little flair. So I think it has, that was the mission it began with, and I think it still fulfills it.
And the challenges in that now, because this is, NPR has weathered many storms, and I'm not just talking about fiscal storms, but just the changing of our habits as media consumers, and whether it be social media or podcasting or blogging or whatever the case may be, that NPR still, for most people, and I realize that many people don't listen this way, but many people do, that it comes down to it's there, it's in your car, and you become captivated.
It is. It's the only source on the radio where you can flip it on and know that you're going to get these two great shows, bookending the day, Morning Edition, and All Things Considered. You're going to get 5-minute news updates hourly, and then you're going to get the other terrific public radio shows, This American Life and Fresh Air. So what we're facing, though, is as you say, a changed dynamic. Most people now get their news from stovepipe sources. They're getting either conservative or liberal versions of the world via social media or the cable channels. And as a consequence, the act of trying to go down the middle of the screen and give a straightforward, balanced account has become somewhat suspect. And I think at its best, NPR manages to get through that. I've got a long chapter in the book about This American Life, and Ira Glass has found that if you step back and say, everybody's already got their mind made up about this subject, but what if I tell a surprising story that can open their minds? What if instead of entering the argument, I can present a narrative filled with people who come alive in the telling of the story and then take listeners to someplace new? And I think that's the great hope for public radio. The best public radio pieces don't buy into this confirmation bias that most people want from cable or online sources. They tell you a story and it takes you someplace different. It enlarges and enlightens your viewpoint rather than confirming whatever you thought you knew when you started listening. So that's NPR at its best.
I've worked at a NPR affiliate station here in Albany for 30 years. And the audience is amazing. And of course, the product that we give along with our programs is, I think, second to none. Absolutely amazing. But Stephen, I'm sure you've heard this a lot, but I'll say it anyway. Management at NPR. It's always been a very difficult thing to run, hasn't it? And I guess, yes. I mean, in the sense of being a member station and that idea of that we're the stations, we're the ones, we're out doing the, we're the individual stations, and yet often it's the tail wagging the dog.
NPR is not a network. There are no owner-operated stations such as in for-profit media. So what it is a collective of sometimes fractious local operators who buy programming from NPR and air it in their markets. And the stations are not always in accord with NPR regarding what the news should be. And this has led to trouble over the years, most particularly about how NPR is going to adapt to the online world. Because if NPR puts a breaking news story out on its website, it's suddenly undercutting what its radio stations are airing in real time. And this is particularly true on the West Coast, where the stations have to wait 3 hours to catch up with the rest of the country. I think NPR can figure out how to solve that. But yes, it's a fractious world, and just maybe that might be a strength at NPR, because there are so many chefs in the kitchen that by the time NPR agrees on something, there is, I think, a kind of loose consensus.
How do you mean that?
I just mean that by the time all counties are heard from, as the saying goes, there's a consensus among the stations about what they want from NPR and how they're going to work together. It's like a fractious family, but they're all part of the same family. So they may fight among themselves, but at the end of these intramural scraps, they're somehow together. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but that's my sense of it.
No, I think you're basically right. I mean, I do think a lot of member stations get ticked off, especially larger stations or medium to large stations, where they're paying a lot of money to NPR and sometimes feel that that NPR is not supporting them as much as they feel that they should.
Well, it is a quilt, NPR public radio, and not only are there the NPR-generated shows, but This American Life, that's independent. Much of what you hear on public radio is not coming from the mothership. It's coming from other independent production companies. And, you know, my hope is that that's a strength. That's, you kind of get a small seed catholicity of producers putting programs on the air on public radio.
The title of the book is On Air, The Triumph and Tumult of NPR. Talk about the tumult a little bit as far as where it has shown. Do you believe there have been times where it's actually shown on the air?
Yes, my book is really a history of NPR. The model was David McCullough's The Path Between the Seas.
Yeah.
And McCullough's other books on great American projects. And I thought NPR is a great American project. And while there have been some good memoirs by people who work at NPR and a couple of good academic books, there has not been a general interest, full set piece of history. So I set out to tell the 50 plus years of NPR's story. And yes, there have been some terrible moments that led to all kinds of dispute and distress. A couple of days after the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan in the early 1980s, NPR ran an interview with a woman from Washington who said, "I wish they'd killed him. I'm sorry they failed." And, you know, suddenly NPR, inadvertently, I think, has called down the wrath of the conservative Republican Party, airing this piece that seemed to be sympathetic to a would-be assassin. And there have been moments like that through the years where NPR has found itself, news is not always glowing. News oftentimes is a volatile topic, and you put it out there on the airwaves or you put it in a newspaper and people are going to get angry. So a news organization has to have some tolerance for blowback. And I think if it's a commercial news enterprise, that tolerance is felt largely in the pocketbook. But with public broadcasting, it's felt politically, it's felt in a community a little more intensely than it might be on a commercial broadcaster. So there have been plenty of moments like that at NPR when they found themselves having stirred up a dust storm, sometimes worse than a dust storm. When it fired Juan Williams, whom I referred just a minute ago, it was a full-blown disaster. They gave no rationale for firing Juan Williams beyond that he'd said something supposedly Islamophobic while appearing as a guest on Fox. And then they just let him go. And they found themselves in a brutal fight with Fox, with the Republican Party, and they were incapable of defending themselves. And on Comedy Central, Jon Stewart famously said, "NPR, you've gotten into a knife fight, and all you've brought is a bag full of David Sedaris books." NPR doesn't quite appreciate that when you get into a tangle in the world we now live in, it's going to be nasty. Because on some level, NPR is still communal. It's still college radio. There's a congeniality and niceness about the place. And right now, the world is not that nice. You know, conversely, NPR can be a very tough place to work because the people who work there believe in it. They're not there just for a paycheck. They want a paycheck, but they're there because they believe they're doing important work. So when there is a dispute at NPR, it's not just over money or not just over amount of airtime you're getting. It's about your belief, your sense of what the journalistic mission is. And there aren't many institutions like that in America. I mean, it's kind of like the church in that regard. People are there because they have faith in the mission.
The rumor always was that on 9/11, when member stations were looking for coverage from the network as planes were going into buildings, that Bob Edwards was on the street having a cigarette. Is that true?
Oh, yes, that's very true. That's more than a rumor. And I've got a long chapter about Bob Edwards and Morning Edition. The title of the chapter sort of gives you the gist of the information in it. It's called Babapalooza.
Yeah.
And on the morning of 9/11, the first bulletin came in. Bob was in the studio. He broke in and said, an airplane has hit a tower at the World Trade Center. And then he went back to regular programming and he walked out of the studio onto the street, Massachusetts Avenue, where there was an outdoor ashtray. And he just lit up a Benson & Hedges and started puffing away. And it took 45 minutes for NPR to start covering this story, a story that the network television news went to immediately. Now, could NPR have told us anything new during that time? Maybe not. Bob had some rationales for not getting on the air live immediately. The phone lines in New York City had been cut, so he couldn't get any need of news from New York. There were no reporters in the building yet at that early hour, et cetera. But as one of his editors said, Bob, all you've got to do is turn on CNN and describe what you're seeing. And that may not sound like great adventurous journalism, but in a time of national crisis, if you can describe what you're seeing and vamp, that's your job. And Bob had been on the job for nearly 25 years, getting up at 1 every morning for that length of time. And he was burned out and starting to fray. And he just wasn't flexible at this moment. And some of NPR's stations, like KCRW, the Los Angeles station, just put on the CNN audio on the air. They were so angry at Bob. The news directors of these stations around the country knew they needed to cover this gigantic disaster, the biggest loss of life in an attack on America since Pearl Harbor. And, you know, if NPR couldn't provide the audio, they would take it from CNN, and they did.
I mean, I was news director at that time here, and I remember just that frustration of not being able to get that information. You were talking about vamping and hoping that Bob Edwards would watch CNN. That's essentially what we did to vamp on our end, because I remember vividly going to NPR and them running a story about talking cash registers. The chapter about Bob Edwards is also interesting because that was something that had been brewing for a really long time. This guy, I mean, you use the word, I think, at least twice, prickly, and that even the most senior of people had a difficult time addressing the overall problem.
Yes, they let it fester. And in Bob's favor, he was a terrific writer, and he had this one unbelievable asset, the most beautiful smoke-tinged baritone voice. And in that day, when many people awakened to Morning Edition on their clock radio, Bob was a bomb in the morning, essentially by his voice saying, you can get up and face the day. And Morning Edition had the biggest audience of, regardless of his failings, had the biggest audience of any morning news show. So getting rid of Bob for his failure to cover 9/11 and his general prickliness and some other errors that he made over time was not an easy decision to come to. And once they came to the decision, the executives at NPR handled it very clumsily.
One of the things that I want to mention before our time runs out, and that is, we certainly see this here at WAMC, and I'm assuming that you found this across the board, Look, I mean, you can. There is the triumph and the tumult of NPR, but it has managed, and I think member stations are certainly responsible for this as well, and often front and center in doing it. But building a loyal audience, that is something that these stations really seem to be able to do.
I agree, and I wrote an op-ed piece for the LA Times addressing the subject of what will be the fate of NPR, how tough is it going to get? And at the end of that piece, I said, despite the political differences and the budgetary concerns, NPR has established itself, largely due to the stations, but also due to the network, as the go-to source for news. And there's tremendous loyalty all over the country. And paradoxically, the very weakness of small-town American newspapering has made NPR in many medium-sized and small towns the only source of news. And if the federal government goes hard after NPR, it will find that out in small towns and cities, the effect is going to be as if they're going after those communities. And Republicans tried to cut NPR's budget during Newt Gingrich's speakership of the House, and they failed for exactly this reason. Now, the world has changed very much since that incident in 1995 due to what we were discussing about the stovepiping of news, but I still believe NPR has this vast and loyal listenership that spreads all over the country. It is a national organization in that regard, and most people, I believe, think it's reliable, and they tune it in.
Steve Oney is the author of On Air, The Triumph and Tumult of NPR. The book is published by Avid Reader Press. Steve, thanks very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Pleasure was mine, Joe. Thank you.
Be well. Thank you very much.
All right, you be well, too.
Again, the name of the book, On Air, it is published by Avid Reader Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.